Wednesday today. Sometimes we're separated by great distances. But, you know, it's just this onus to just, you know, contact our friends, keep in touch with them, just so we know what's going on. Like, is it useful for them to, so they can actually, they've got someone to talk to. Maybe they're worried about a very sick member of their family. And also, even though we probably make dua for our friends the whole time, but if we can then, if we find out that someone, you know, maybe their mother or their father has cancer, is seriously ill, it actually informs our dua, so we can make a more precise dua, which, inshallah, is maybe even more useful. So this is something we need to bear in mind, and, you know. And I just thought, and I should mention just one of the examples in the lives of one of our martyrs, of martyr of service, actually, the former president of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Shahid Raisi. So he, for example, even when he was working in the judiciary, would have sort of weekly open meetings. And, you know, he would actually, sometimes he would even be there until night, just chatting with people, and they'd even come to him just to sort of solve financial problems. So presumably he was even sort of helping with that. But obviously the main thing is that he was donating so much of his time. So I pray that this is something that we can really give a lot more of, especially in these busy days where, you know, people's lives are becoming increasingly complex, and I say complex for a reason. So we really need to be much more aware of that. So, inshallah, this is just a reminder for us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on RIB English Radio. It's me, Sister Zainab, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. We are glad you could join us. Here on Iran Radio, we get familiar with interesting facts about the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran is considered one of the most significant sources which gave rise to the development of Islamic art and architecture, specifically the so-called Quranic arts of calligraphy and illumination. The Holy Quran is divided into 30 equal parts. There are 114 chapters or surahs and 6,236 verses or ayahs, containing 99,464 words made up of 330,113 letters. The longest surah of the Quran is Al-Baqarah, with 286 verses, which is the second surah of the Quran, while the shortest surah is Al-Kawthar, with only 3 verses. We start off this hour's programs with the key. The program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities raised about various Islamic and Shiite topics. They will be followed by Round the World with reporters. Reporters from around the world tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from countries both near and afar. And our final program this hour is Viewpoints. The program presents an analytical roundtable discussion of various political and social issues of the Islamic world today. Stay with us for the next hour.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be speaking about a very interesting topic, and that topic is the virtue of clemency, which in Arabic we call hilm, very close to patience. So today on The Key, we're going to be asking, what are the virtues of clemency? Why is clemency such a virtuous characteristic? In response to this question, we need to take a look at some of the hadith which have been narrated from the infallibles regarding the virtue of clemency. By way of example, in one beautiful hadith, we read the following. The Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "The clement person is almost a prophet." Clemency, from this hadith we can gather that clemency and patience is one of the virtues of the prophets, one of them. And when a person adopts clemency, he takes a step towards moving in the direction of the acquisition of, you know, the prophetic virtues, one of which is clemency. In another beautiful hadith which has been narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam, it has been said that clemency is the completion of the intellect. So a person, you know, he may be smart, but if he isn't clement and doesn't have patience, he loses his patience in different situations, then, you know, this is a sign of a deficiency in his intellect, obviously, because being clement and patient, you know, it's the most prudent thing to do in all situations. In another beautiful hadith, again narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam, it's been reported that he said, "Clemency arranges the affair of the believer." What that means is that if a person acts impatiently and without clemency, then it's possible that his plans, his affairs may become misarranged, disrupted, disorganized. But when he is clement and patient and deliberates over his affairs, they become well arranged and ordered and, you know, systematized, and, you know, they lead to the results that he expects and the objectives that he has from them. Imam Ali also said, the beauty of a man is his clemency. This is a kind of an aesthetic virtue in clemency, and that if a person is clement, it gives the person an ethical and moral attractiveness and beauty, and it, you know, it attracts people towards him. Finally, it's been reported that Imam al-Ridha, alayhi salam, the eighth Imam, said, a man cannot be a worshipper until he is clement. A person who is not clement, he cannot really worship God. This could mean that, well, worshipping God and obeying him, it requires, you know, undertaking, you know, big tasks. These tasks, they cannot be completed until a person is clement and patient and carries them out until their end. Otherwise, if he doesn't have patience, he might, you know, he might take up an undertaking, an act of worship, but leave it. Like, for example, a good example of this is the pilgrimage to Mecca, which people who have gone there know how difficult it is, and it really requires a lot of clemency and patience, and not only patience in performing the acts of worship, but also being clement and patient with the other, you know, people in the caravan going to Hajj and so on and so forth. These then are the virtues of clemency. By looking at them, we can understand better why it is so virtuous and noble. Thank you for joining us on The Key. We were looking at the virtues of clemency. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
While presidents and leaders took the podium during the UNGA high-level week in New York, activists and demonstrators protested the UNGA debates as the people of Gaza continue to be ethnically cleansed by the Israeli occupation and the world remains watching. Banners condemning the UN's negligence towards preserving international law were held high among the crowd, alongside the complicity of the U.S. in the forced starvation of the Palestinian people and the sale of weapons to the occupation killing the Palestinians.
After 2 years of genocide, most of the world has come to realize that it is in fact a genocide, except the United States and Israel, of course. And the U.S. is, Trump is speaking today, which is a mockery of anything.
The protest today at the UN is mostly about the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu is down here, and there's going to be talks about how Israel and the U.S. are going to respond, which is most likely going to lead to full annexation of the West Bank. We are also protesting the fact that multiple states or multiple countries have now recognized a Palestinian state, which, while it is one step forward, is not full liberation. You know, you can't recognize that the knife is there without fully pulling it out and healing the wound.
As world leaders gather at the UN headquarters here in New York to discuss various issues, the urgency of Gaza's situation is highlighted by protesters surrounding the building. These protesters are demanding the protection of Palestinians. They are demanding the end of the Gaza siege and the liberation of Palestine.
Demonstrators also criticize the double standards and selective protection that the international body stands for when it comes to preaching about women's rights, but Palestine is often overlooked.
What kind of values do you stand for? Like you just said, there's pregnant women, there's babies being killed, there's no access to menstrual supplies. How can you be human if you're not letting these, if not letting aid in, not stopping the occupation? It's ridiculous.
It's all of our rights. It's women's rights, it's children's rights, it's human rights, it's really planet rights. Like, we're, by not protecting one community of people, we're really not protecting any of us, because it's a chain reaction. And when you fail to protect someone, you're really failing to protect yourself. And I think they have to remember that.
More protests are planned to occur for the length of the high-level week, calling for the freedom of Palestine from occupation and the preservation of the Palestinian identity. Rachel Hamdouin, New York.
Efforts at the international level to recognize and support a Palestinian state have been ongoing for the past 5 decades. These efforts have speeded up in recent weeks, as Israel's intensified war on Gaza has prompted more countries to recognize Palestinian statehood.
These recognitions are the result of the blood of our sons and daughters in Gaza, their sacrifices, and the genocide taking place there. They would not have happened without the continuous struggle of our people.
Palestinians say the recognition alone is not enough, without real international measures to bring an end to their suffering caused by Israel's occupation of their land.
Recognition must empower the Palestinian people to realize sovereignty and full national independence. Israel's membership in international bodies must be suspended, and concrete actions must be imposed to hold the occupying regime criminally accountable.
International acts of recognition of Palestine are seen by many as long overdue, but Palestinians insist these steps must be understood against backdrop of genocide in Gaza and the continuing struggle of thousands of prisoners.
Sadly, the world has shut its eyes and ears to the massacre in Gaza. It demands the release of 45 captives while ignoring tens of thousands of our prisoners, including my son. These double standards must end. The recognition comes in a natural context. Palestine has always existed, with or without recognition, and it will endure through the steadfastness and resistance of its people.
In 1974, the UN General Assembly granted the Palestinian Liberation Organization observer status. That was followed by the symbolic declaration of Palestinian statehood in Algeria in 1988. And in 2012, 138 countries recognized Palestine as an observer state of the UN General Assembly. Similar measures were taken in the years afterwards. Analysts, however, say the real priority today is not more declarations, but halting the genocide, ensuring accountability, and strengthening Palestinian resilience. What Palestinians need today is not more ceremonies or declarations, but a strategy that connects their sacrifices to real accountability, unity, and protection under international law. Recognition alone will not stop genocide or displacement. Naqa Hamid, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
Outside the Palestinian mission in London, history in the making. The iconic Palestinian flag raised, preceded by an impassioned speech by the country's ambassador, flanked by British politicians.
This moment is not only about Palestine. It is also about Britain and the British government's solemn responsibility. It is about ending the denial of the Palestinian people's inalienable right to freedom and self-determination. And it is an acknowledgement of a historic injustice.
The ceremony follows the UK's recognition of Palestine as a state, aligning Britain with more than 140 countries worldwide.
This is now officially the Palestinian embassy in London, the country's flag atop this pole for the first time since the UK's recognition of the country. It is a symbolic but powerful moment, the participants here say, one that affirms a nation's struggle for self-determination that has gone on for far too long.
But beyond symbolism, questions remain. With the genocide in Gaza ongoing, the West Bank under occupation, and Britain's continued arms sales to Israel, does recognition mean anything?
British government recognizes Palestine carries with it responsibilities. Responsibility not to supply arms to Israel. Responsibilities not to share military information with Israel. And a demand, which we will be intensively making, for full economic sanctions against Israel, including all trade embargoes, until the occupation ends.
In the run-up to the recognition announcement, a YouGov poll found less than half of Britons saying recognition was a good idea, while only 18% disagreed.
I can understand the skepticism and cynicism with the history of this whole area, so I can understand that completely. My role as a parliamentarian and the people that I represent, and which are the good people of this country, and millions of them, will now ensure that they utilize this position to take it to the next step.
At the same time, there are other voices in Britain, like those at this debate in Birmingham, who say while recognition was long overdue, the only way forward is one state, not two.
The two-state proposition is clearly a Zionist talking point. It's designed to kick the can down the road, to continually kick the can down the road, to never, ever be in a situation where such a notion could ever be brought into existence.
For supporters here, today is about hope, solidarity, and international legitimacy. For Palestinians under bombardment, it's a reminder that recognition alone is not liberation. Saeed Purizap, London.
On Monday, hundreds of thousands of people flooded the streets of tens of Italian cities to express their solidarity with the Palestinians who have been suffering from indescribable horrors perpetrated by the Israeli regime. Rallies and demonstrations were held on the occasion of a 24-hour general strike involving the public and private sectors called by a string of base unions. In a joint statement, the unions said the strike was against the genocide in Gaza and the Italian government's supply of weapons to Israel.
Non è più possibile.
Cannot tolerate any longer the crimes that Netanyahu is committing against the Palestinian, and Italy's government is not only doing nothing to stop it, but it is an accomplice.
We said it many times already that we firemen are also UN ambassadors, as you can see from the UNICEF tag on our uniform. And we cannot remain silent in the face of the slaughter of children in Palestine.
Hundreds of thousands of Italians have taken to the streets to voice their outrage at the Italian government for its unconditional support to the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Rallies in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians are being held in more than 80 cities and towns across the Italian peninsula and islands. More than 100,000 people in the Italian capital, Rome, staged a demonstration near Central Station, while dockers in Genoa blocked access roads to the port as part of protests against the Israeli regime's ground offensive in Gaza City. Pro-Palestine rallies were also held in all major Italian cities, including Milan, Bologna, Naples, and Turin.
If our government acts as an accomplice in the face of the Gaza genocide, what sorts of future will lie ahead us?
A new large pro-Palestine demonstration is also slated to take place in Rome on October 4. Max Civili, Rome.
As Israel illegally and brutally invades Gaza City, a noise protest was held at the headquarters of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the powerful pro-Zionist lobbying group. Many are saying that the Holocaust occurring in Gaza City is a shocking new low in Israel's attempted genocide of the Palestinian people, and that immediate support for Palestine is needed to prevent the Western-backed invasion.
It's on the responsibility of everybody, whether you're Palestinian or Arab or American or whatever you may be, all across the world,
to come out and show a force in a united action to say that we reject all of these actions by the United States and every other Western complicit country that has allowed the genocide to go on for so long.
This week, Canada and Australia followed the leader of the English Commonwealth in finally recognizing a Palestinian state. But many say that it's an empty safety valve to manipulate their increasingly anti-Israel constituencies and to distract from the Gaza City takeover.
What is a recognition of a statehood if you're not going to actually stop the killing of our people and you're going to keep bankrolling the state of Israel to keep killing those people? There's no point in having a state if there's no people to live with it. And right now, the people of Gaza are being exterminated and being genocided. And so that's the need that we need to address, not just some fake statehood announcement by all these complicit countries.
This is definitely an attempt to try and silence the masses, to try and distract them from their original want and their demand of an arms embargo, and also try and protect themselves in their own image, because they can say, you know, oh, but we recognize the Palestinian state. But what does that mean for the actual people in Palestine when their land is being stolen every day, when there's still U.S. bombs being dropped from them, when the U.K. and Canada are still helping to send weapons?
What's next for Israel's genocide? It's being reported that aid officials working in Gaza have been warned against investing time or resources in the central refugee camps, which house hundreds of thousands of families, as they plan to invade the refugee camps after Gaza City.
After 6 weeks of fighting, some 300,000 Palestinians have left Gaza City, with nearly 1 million unwilling or unable to leave. Many say they know that if they do leave, Israel will steal their homes and not allow them to return. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
First ever wrestling double for Iran in Zagreb. Freestyle champions and now Greco-Roman wrestlers have sealed it early with a dominant show, bringing pride and joy back home.
After the glorious achievements of Iran's wrestlers, they have lifted the nation's spirit. We clearly see people's happiness in society. Everyone felt proud. Like that beautiful phrase printed on the wrestlers' singlets, "My life for Iran," with that same spirit, Iran's flag is truly precious to us.
Iran's Greco-Roman team, with a striking and dominant display, managed to secure their championship early, with 3 golds, 1 silver, and 1 bronze across 7-day categories. They sealed their victory a full day before the competition ended. Meanwhile, the freestyle team also shone, earning 2 golds, 2 silvers, and 3 bronzes to win the 2025 Zagreb Championship. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has also congratulated the victories of the Iranian wrestlers, saying, "I congratulate the young champions in Greco-Roman wrestling competitions. Steadfast determination of you and also your brothers in freestyle wrestling have brought honor to the country. I ask God for your continued success and victories, and I congratulate the athletes, coaches, and officials."
Wrestling runs deep in the culture of Iranian people. Its energy and passion are not just about today's victories. With the potential we have, more young athletes will definitely join the team, and even those training in the most remote corners of the country now have the chance to continue on their path of growth and progress.
The back-to-back victories mark a new chapter for Iranian wrestling, showing both strength on the mat and the promise of a new generation rising behind.
Iran's dominance on the mat is now undeniable, with both freestyle and Greco-Roman squads crowned world champions in Croatia. Ali Reza Akbari, Tehran.
NATO deployed 3 French fighter jets to eastern Poland on Friday as a so-called deterrent against Russia. Many analysts argue that it is the Western alliance's expansion that sparked the conflict in Ukraine. The European Commission has unveiled its 19th sanctions package targeting Moscow's energy, banking and high-tech sectors.
We are working on a new solution to finance Ukraine's defense efforts. This is based on the immobilized Russian assets. We must be very clear, this is Russia's war, and the perpetrator must pay for it.
But inside the European Parliament, critics warn that hard-pressed EU taxpayers are footing the bill.
The EU has spent €169 billion on the war so far, and the new 7-year budget would add another €100 billion. Up to 20% of the EU budget could go to Ukraine.
Some claim that one of the main beneficiaries of the war is the United States.
Socialismo.
We used to buy cheap energy from the Russians, and today we are spending 700 billion euros to buy that same energy from Washington. The EU has also failed on weapons, which we buy from the United States to give to Ukraine.
There's no doubt that natural gas sanctions imposed by Brussels have hit the EU much harder than Russia, leading to soaring European energy costs while Moscow was able to find alternative markets. Then, thanks to high global oil and gas prices, the Kremlin was able to offset the economic squeeze intended by the EU. Several of the EU's 27 government leaders are expected to oppose the bloc's latest sanctions package against Russia.
It remains hard to see how the European Union is going to respond because the member states remain divided over the issue. But 19 rounds of sanctions do not have the effect.
And a growing number of EU lawmakers are questioning double standards, asking why no tough measures have been imposed on Israel over its genocide in Gaza. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
You came in the name of freedom. You came in the name of democracy. You kill in the name of God. But not in my name will you kill. Is it not enough what you've done with all the bloodshed you've caused? Yet your greed drives you on. In your brutal race for acquisition, no land is left untouched. Driven by a vile ambition to have the whole world in your clutch. Every single new addition to your slave colony does nothing to dull your ambition to leave no nation free. It is indeed a sad condition that you suffer from. This itching desire for prime position to have all under your feet. Not in my name will you fall. Against your evil methods of violence and intimidation, against your hijacking and misinterpretation of my my peaceful faith and revelation. I shout with billions in this demonstration. Not in my name will you fight. Not in my name will you kill. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you pray. Not in my name will you dare to speak again. Not in our name.
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, let there be light, and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers in the program, helping me criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Yasser, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Always good being with you, Brother Muhammad Javad.
Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the studio.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, one of the movies that we have decided actually to criticize is entitled Disobedience, released in 2017, directed by Sebastian Lelio, featuring Rachel Weisz, Rachel McAdams, and Alessandro Nivola, to just name a few, among all the actors and actresses, in fact, playing a part in this movie, Disobedience. IMDb gave this movie 6.6 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes 84%, and the box office for this movie was around $8 million. Well, after the death of her father, Ronit, a young woman returns to an Orthodox community that cast her out as a child. However, she ends up igniting her passion for her childhood friend. That's all about the plot of this movie, Disobedience, released in 2017, directed by Sebastian Lelio. And after we come back, after the break, we'll continue our program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
It's insane that you're here.
This is my house we're talking about. I keep it in order.
Did you get married? I think you should leave him.
I'd do anything for you. Do you know that?
Look at me! I have always been this way! I want you to give me my freedom. I want to take your picture.
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Disobedience, released in 2017, directed by Sebastian Lelio. Sayyid Abdullah, what is the central theme of Disobedience?
Disobedience. Yes, that's essential.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, in a very simple way.
Yeah.
I think the name says it all. So obviously, we're talking about forbidden love, romance, religion, to name a few, freedom. What should I say? So when you add all of them together, you're going to come with something forbidden. So your freedom and your romance goes against your faith, or the faith of the people that you live amongst, which they consider to be wrong.
Yes.
So this is obviously the theme. It's just trying to have a romantic relationship with the opposite, with the same gender, to be precise. That goes against the Orthodox or Jewish teachings.
And all religions, by the way.
All religions, by the way. But from the movie perspective, yes, obviously. Of course. So obviously that becomes a forbidden act. But obviously they're trying to dress it under romance and under personal freedom.
I see. Yeah. Well, how did you receive this movie? Like, did you like it or not?
No, I didn't like it at all.
I see.
It's not like the movie itself, it's very evident of where this is going, right?
Yeah.
So then again, they're just trying to prove, or they're trying to get the viewer to accept a notion that we as humans do not accept anyway, but just gets pushed down your throat that this is personal freedom, you have to accept it, and religion shouldn't have a role to play in this.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously it's promoting that homosexuality theme to the public, which is something that I find awful. I don't care who's doing it.
Mm-hmm, I see. Well, Brother Yasser, how was the film received critically? And tell me about your own personal opinion of this movie.
Look, the movie itself, the theme behind it, about freedom, inshallah, I'm sure that we will come more about the central theme later on.
Of course.
But the concept, it's not something specific to the Jewish religion. It's like you said, all religions have this particular problem.
Yes.
And also understanding that this concept of humanism and this concept of the Renaissance and all of that is very important to understand when trying to analyze such a movie like this, especially what's based on an Orthodox Jewish community that is, I think, is based in UK, if I'm not mistaken, from what I took from it. Again, with personal freedom and personal choice. I didn't really read any critics or criticism per se, but I would assume that by means of the box office and stuff that you mentioned, it was received quite well in terms of its artistic value. However, how the Jewish community received it would have been a different interpretation. I haven't read, I didn't see anything regarding it. Maybe I quickly do some research on it, but I'm assuming the Jewish community may not have looked too fondly on something like this.
Sayyid Abdullah was mentioning the fact that, he didn't like the movie or this kind of mentality because of the too much freedom poured into this movie, right? The question is, what should be the limit of, let's say, the freedom of human beings, you know?
Like, so
if somebody argues for, like, the humanness, this movie tries to humanize, for example, the scenarios.
Mm.
Like, should there be any kind of limit? And what is the limit?
So, for example, that's a very difficult question to answer in the space of 2 minutes. But one of the main issues as well we see in the movie is when, obviously, she becomes pregnant and then she says, I want choice. Give me my choice. Give me my freedom. And I don't want my child to be born in a community like this. You know, let me do what I want. So the point is that they see, and the movie is showing, that religion restricts. This is what the movie is trying to portray in this particular manner.
Yes.
However, when it comes to freedom, I mean, it's a very, discussion that is not something new. It's something that has been there from the very beginning of time. Like in mankind, and it'll be there till the end. What is our relationship in terms of freedom? Do we have absolute freedom? Do we not have absolute freedom? What is the relationship between our freedom and, for example, the confines of religion? on one side. And on the other side, our, for example, the idea of our own acts. You know, and all of that, for example, in relations to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in relation to religion, in relations to the effects they have on in the system of creation. So the limit here is not something easy to kind of say, okay, this is the limit. If you want to look at it in a very basic religious kind of framework or religious type of paradigm, it is clear that your freedom should not go past the demarcations that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has set for you.
Yes.
That is a simple way of looking at it.
Yes.
Again, it's a very simple way of looking at it.
Yes.
That the divine law that has been set out by a religion are those demarcations that you do not cross.
Right.
Like, don't do this, don't do that. So you don't have the freedom to do that.
Exactly.
Right? So
thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Disobedience, released in 2017, directed by Sebastiano Leo. And then when we come back, we continue our program, Viewpoints, the movie critic program on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Amit, we weren't expecting you.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. My father just died.
So you came to wander around?
Why else would I be here? Hello, Esty.
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Syed Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Disobedience, released in 2017, directed by Sebastian Lelio. Well, Syed Abdullah, how does this movie depict the Orthodox Jewish community?
I mean, the movie does not need to depict them. The Orthodox Jewish, usually there's a very strict group of people. They're very strict. They have their own norms. They have, they are very preservative, very conservative in their culture and what they do. And they are, like, as we say, very, very tight community. Like, they are very linked to one another. Like, they work on a singular kind of format where everything affects everyone. And they keep their eyes on everyone and everything. So they're very, very close-circled kind of community. Unlike other denominations out there, which they share the same faith and what have you, but they don't have that closeness. These guys, like, everything to them matters. So they, in terms of community, in terms of their norms and their culture and their whatever they do. So, yes. And I think the movie, they depicted that as well.
I see.
How close they were together, how they watch everything and everyone.
I see. And we also experience that kind of orthodoxy in some other religions, as you mentioned, like, for example, Mormonism, right? Or some other religions, basically, when, especially when there is this label attack or whatever.
Even in Islam, we have such denominations as well. For example, we talk about Sufis, or we talk about, I don't know, Zaydis. So the idea is that even in Islam, we have certain groups which also have that very close Orthodox kind of culture.
I see. Brother Yasser, what role does religion play in shaping the characters' lives?
In this particular movie, it's very important because the father of the girl, Ronette, was the head preacher. He was the head rabbi of that particular community. He was someone who was looked up by many people.
Yes.
And then secondly, that particular, what's his name, Dovid, the guy.
Yes.
He was his student and also grew up in the house. As you see, he was in the house, grew up in the house, and these two girls were in that house as well. So religion is a very important part, especially in any person who wants to live a religious life.
Yes.
However, in terms of whether there are certain things, nuances, or certain disobedience that may come about with regards to religion and one's human life, where does one draw the line? It's a different discussion. But you can see that both of these individuals respected their traditions and wanted to go to the synagogue and to the funeral and so on and so on. So they were very much ingrained in them, the religious aspect of their lives.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Yasser and Syed Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Disobedience, released in 2017, directed by Sebastian Lelio. Of course, we haven't come to the end of the critique of this movie, and hopefully we'll do that in the upcoming episode. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Your wife, she won't be distracted by Ronnie's return?
We all have forgiven you, Ronnie.
What for, Fema?
For everything.
We never thought we'd see you again.
Sorry to disappoint you.
And you're not married.
It's important that this week is conducted with honor. It's the most important thing.
Honor.
IRIB English Radio.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners from around the world. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. Very nice to have you with us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. We start off this hour's programs with Unscripted. The program provides analysis and commentary on some important and sensitive issues of the day, with emphasis on the West Asia region. That will be followed by The Last Savior. The program discusses the occultation of Imam of the Age, the promised Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, the culture of waiting, and much more. Stay with us for the next hour.
Hello and welcome to Unscripted. I'm Kaveh Tahwai. We have the pleasure of having with us today Susan Abulhawa. Susan Abulhawa is a Palestinian-American scientist, writer, and activist. Her first novel, Mornings in Jenin, was translated into 32 languages and sold more than a million copies. The sales and reach of her debut novel made Abulhawa the most widely read Palestinian author of all time. Now, she was also born to Palestinian refugees of the 1967 war, which makes her that much of an expert on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, especially with the genocide that's going on in the Gaza Strip. Susan Abulhawa, welcome to Unscripted.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. We understand that you went to the Gaza Strip. You said that that changed your life. The totality of the devastation, according to what I read, to have overwhelmed you. And to use your words, actually, quote, it has honestly changed my life in a way that was sometimes difficult to put into words, is what you stated. Now, just recently, you had also the U.S. envoy to the Middle East, or we call it West Asia, Stephen Witkoff, who also visited the Gaza Strip. Do you think he saw what you saw and that it changed his life or impacted or affected it in any shape or form?
I mean, I can't speak for what's in another person's heart, but I do know that Steve Witkoff is a Zionist at heart. I mean, he has a history of exhibiting that. I don't think he wanted to see what I saw. I don't, even if he had an opportunity to do so, he didn't want to. He was happy with the sanitized and very limited version that was engineered for them at the GHF sites. I doubt it. These are committed Zionists. They are Jewish supremacists, and he is one of that network that pervade the U.S. government. And so, no, I don't think our experiences are the same. I went to Gaza as a human being, as a Palestinian, as someone who is concerned with the rights and the well-being and the protection of the most vulnerable people on the earth, who are being literally attacked by the most powerful countries in the world. I went there as a woman, as a mother, as a writer, to collect stories, to bring in aid, to do whatever I could as an individual to provide relief in the midst of what I very early on recognized as an unfolding Holocaust.
One of the statements that came on Witkoff's visit, and I'm using him not in particular just to broadcast him, but rather some of the actions that was described, and in this case I'm going to use statements coming from Hamas, which is quite telling. One of them was that Hamas said that his visit was a show and that it was a propaganda show to quell the growing anger over the U.S. partnership with the Zionist regime, as Hamas calls them, and imposing hunger on the residents of Gaza Strip. Do you think that Hamas has a valid